It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by
Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can catch me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. And you can also find our show on Twitter, of course, at Locked On Rockets. And if you guys appreciate what we do here at Locked On Rockets, do me a favor, subscribe to us on whatever platform you use for listening to podcasts. Leave us a review, drop us some stars. I would sincerely appreciate it. And above all else, please share the podcast on whatever platforms you see fit, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, wherever you engage in social media, please share the podcast. That's how we can keep this thing going strong and keep you guys informed, up to date, and entertained every single day of the week. So as promised, we will get to part two of my chat with Keith Smith. So if you missed part one, that's available. It came out Thursday morning. Part two coming out Friday morning. And we'll just jump straight into the audio with Keith. And we'll get to that right now. Yeah, and with the Rockets being, you know, and I'm glad you brought up that point, because that's exactly where I was going to try and, move into next is, you know, with this hiatus, which is, you know, unprecedented. We've never experienced something like this. It does give teams, you know, the chance to rest up. It gives players who are, you know, struggling with, you know, minor lingering injuries or potentially major injuries, you know, time to continue rehabbing and maybe even make an appearance at the end of the season. I know some people have thrown around the thought of, you know, maybe Kevin Durant makes a reappearance this season, you know, should the Nets, you know, make some noise in the playoffs and, you know, the season get extended long enough. But I think for the Rockets, you know, being one of, if not, they might be the oldest team in the league off the top of my head, but they're definitely one of the oldest teams. You know, getting this break in play, this stoppage in action to be able to, like you said, rest, you know, recuperate and play this high intensity brand of basketball. You know, we saw the 6-game win streak and then we saw the 4-game losing streak. So we kind of saw the highs and the lows of what this could look like as far as small ball is concerned. And kind of, I guess, just to kind of wrap up the thoughts around this, you know, we kind of touched on the team. We touched on Harden and Westbrook. And, you know, to wrap up our Rockets thoughts, we're going to talk about Tillman Fertitta. And so this kind of segues us into the hiatus and everything that's going on. So Tillman Fertitta, you know, as the owner of the Rockets has said, you know, has come out publicly and said that he's not, you know, considering doing minority partners or anything for the organization, although he seems like he might be in some financial trouble. What have you kind of read about and what are your thoughts on him and, you know, this ongoing situation?
So I'm going to go back to when he was originally announced as the purchaser of the team. One of the things that I was told at that time, and I heard this from several different people, was it was really surprising because he had to basically cash out majorly to buy the team in the first place. And that was something that the NBA had looked to actively get away from, was guys who were basically mortgaging everything that they had to be able to buy teams in the past. They just didn't want that because that never really seems to go well for competitive balance and all the kind of things that really matter. And then immediately upon buying the team, we start hearing that same summer was things like, all right, don't do this, don't do that. We got to keep the tax down. We can't be in the tax. Keep payroll down and all those kind of things. And that really started to leave for me a lot of questions of like, wait, this team is right there. Like, this is a, you have a title contender. Like, well, what's happening here and why are we doing this? And that's only kind of grown stronger as we've gone over the last, what, he's on the team now, third season. Third season, right? So as you are, you know, moving along here, you're starting to see more things, right? Again, this year, not that they traded anybody overly useful to them this season in the roster, and that, but that was a lot designed around, got to get out of the tax. We don't want to be a tax team again. And now when you're hearing these other things, like he was one of the owners who, no one, it sounds like, from my understanding, you probably know better than I do, no one related to the Rockets specifically, but in his other businesses, he's let a lot of employees go, whether it be layoffs or furloughs or severance packages, whatever the case is. It all amounts to basically the same thing. Employees were let go. It sounds like that's happened pretty heavily across the board in his other businesses. I know here in Orlando, we have a lot of Landry's locations here, which I know he's one of the owners of. And that is, you know, a location that's been hit very hard and have let a lot of folks go from the Landry Restaurant Group. So that's a challenge. But the reality is with the Rockets, for me, what I, you know, all the rest of it is what it is. And I don't know enough about those things. But in the NBA world, I do know enough about it. And what I know is when you start making these ultimatums to people of we can't spend that much, we got to do this, it really starts to raise red flags for me, because you just bought the team. You bought a team that was a title contender. Most times those owners come in and are, it's a little often, unfortunately, to the detriment. It's let's go all in. Look at the Brooklyn Nets, right? Mikhail Prokhorov buys that team. Let's trade for every, you know, aging superstar that, you know, I loved, you know, for a decade or more. Let's get all those guys and see, you know, where this goes. And now, you know, with the Rockets, it was almost like, yeah, we got to start moving in the other direction. Like this isn't enough. And what it worries me is, are we facing down? Let's say this team, let's be optimistic. We get the season back, but let's say they flame out in the first or second round. Is he going to look at this thing and say, all right, it's time to move on from James Harden. Let's get from whatever we can from him. Maybe not this year, but is that going to happen next year if they're not as good as whatever it is he thinks that they should be? And that's where I get worried for Rockets fans of, you are so close and right there. And then it's just when you start cutting corners, that really raises a lot of red flags.
Yeah, we've definitely seen a lot of, you know, moves kind of made at the margins, kind of some of these decisions, you know, in the past couple seasons where, you know, I think the biggest one at first was, you know, letting Trevor Ariza walk away, which, you know, is maybe understandable when you go back and look that he, you know, got paid $15 million a year, or, you know, that one-off $15 million contract from the Suns. And you think, yeah, was Trevor Ariza worth $15 million? No. But then when you look at his replacement, which was supposed to be James Ennis, and then, you know, the whole 10-game experiment of Carmelo Anthony at the start of last season, which seems like forever ago now.
Oh my gosh, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, then you start looking at moves like that where they're, you know, they're banking on these vet minimum contracts, and they thought they had enough and they just really didn't. And the team looked completely different by the end of the season. And, you know, you kind of look at some of these moves where you're like, okay, well, if you're wheeling and dealing draft picks to get under the luxury tax and things like that, then, you know, what's the ultimate goal here? Is the ultimate goal to win, or is the ultimate goal to save? So I think I appreciate those thoughts. I think, you know, they kind of hit the nail on the head there with a lot of it. So kind of as we move away from the Rockets now, though, and kind of look at the NBA at large, just going into the season, you know, I don't know, did you have your list of your predictions for the playoffs and, you know, who you thought was going to succeed and what teams you thought you're going to struggle coming into the season?
Yeah, actually, it's funny you asked that. I was just because there's not a whole heck of a lot else to do right now. I was cleaning up my desk and reorganizing some things, and I moved prominently to a place where I could see them, my predicted standing. So I do have those right in front of me from what I thought before the start of the season.
Okay, well, I guess
I don't know if I should have admitted that, though.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see how bad it wound
you're
up.
Really not too bad.
Okay. Well, first things first, where did the Rockets fall on that list? Where did you have them pegged and, you know, compared to where they're at right now?
Adam second in the West. I'm a big
That's gracious. Okay.
Yeah, I'm a big continuity guy, and I thought even though they had switched out Westbrook for Chris Paul, I thought that they were going to be really good. I thought that, you know, the rest of the roster was more or less the same. You had a couple role players sliding in that weren't there, and I thought that that was going to be there. And I thought that there was a chance that a team like the Lakers would not really prioritize the regular season. It was just kind of play their way into it. And that's why I initially thought that they were going to be the second team in the West.
All right. Well, what did your entire Western Conference predictions look like?
So I had the Clippers at the top of the conference. I loved what they did. I thought that they were going to be a team. And I thought because they're the Clippers, I thought that they'd really put a high premium on, let's try to get to that one seed and push this thing through. Then the Rockets. Then I had the Lakers. I'm not going to overlook LeBron and AD. Then I had Utah, Denver, Portland, San Antonio and Golden State. So Warriors, I obviously didn't think the rash of injuries would happen. I thought that they'd still be good enough with Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and at the time, D'Angelo Russell, maybe good enough that Klay Thompson eventually gets back. And then the Spurs, I was that guy who I picked them, I think, 2 years in a row to miss the playoffs and was obviously clearly wrong. And I said, you know what, I'll now be the guy who's a year too late on the Spurs than the guy who continues to be a year too early.
There we go. Okay. I see. So a couple of those are a little off right now. So I guess kind of springboarding off that, you know, there have been some, you know, some really great stories, especially in the Western Conference this season, of teams that have really kind of surprised, and then, you know, some teams that have obviously disappointed. So which is the best surprise to you in the West this season?
Yeah, I'm going to give you two, Memphis and Oklahoma City. And for me, I'll own up accountability here. I had Oklahoma City 13th in the West, and I had Memphis last. And I thought Memphis would be the worst team in the NBA. I didn't see it. I rookie point guard. I was like, I think John Morant's going to be good, but I think he's going to be good in the back half of year two and then into year three. I did not expect him to be this good. I think their pieces fit really well, and that's been there. And then Oklahoma City, part of what I priced in there was I just thought they'd be sort of a kind of average team, and then they'd start selling off all their pieces as it looked like they were really trying to kick off kind of a full-scale rebuild. So those two, for me, those are clearly the best stories in the NBA. I would give, if you're going to make me pick one over the other, I'd give a slight nod to Memphis because I just thought that they'd be absolutely terrible. And the fact that they're right here as we, you know, took the break, 3.5 game lead for the final playoff spot, and they're hanging right around 500 all year, that's pretty impressive.
We will continue our discussion with Keith Smith here in just one moment, so you guys don't go anywhere. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Continuing our discussion with Keith Smith about the NBA at large, so we'll get to that right now. Right, there have been some opportunities. You know, I've brought up Memphis in this podcast specifically just because I'm a huge Ja Morant fan. I think what they're doing over there is great. That's going to be such a fun team to watch for years to come. And I even recently, I did a trash talk podcast where I refused to actually trash talk the Grizzlies just because of how much I'm enjoying what they're doing over there. So I slandered 28 teams, because obviously I'm not going to slander the Rockets on a Rockets podcast. Anyways, so kind of going from there, you're looking at the playoff picture and kind of how things are, you know, looking right now as we're sitting in this hiatus. What are some of the interesting matchups or potential matchups that you'd really like to see once, you know, play resumes and kind of, I guess, going from the, in addition to that, I guess we can kind of talk about, you know, maybe first we should talk about, do you think we're going to reopen the season and play, you know, some more games? Do you think the NBA is going to come back and just say, all right, we just got to dive straight into the playoffs? And that's kind of a two-parter question, I suppose.
Yeah, I'll start with the back half. I'm an eternal optimist, and I want to believe that the league will come back. Now, I will say every increasing day, I have a little more fear that we've seen what we're going to see. My thing is, I've been, you know, others have reported on this, and I've heard the exact same thing, is that if we can't get things wrapped up by Labor Day, the league's just going to call it, because the reality is, then you're running into too deep into next season. And now what you've done is you've really impacted 2 years when you could have probably just impacted one. So I think whether that is we can get back in, let's say, August, but we can only make it look this way, or we can't get back at all, you know, because of where it's going to be. That's the thing. What I want to kind of try to remind people, and I think the situation with the Chinese Basketball Association is really a good kind of standpoint to take a look at there, or measuring stick, I guess is the best way to put that, is when you look at what's happened with them, was they've pushed back. Now, maybe this latest delay to May is more related to the Olympics and less to the fact that they're just not ready. But one thing that is instructive is before they start, they're given a minimum of a 2 to 3 week ramp up period of bringing players back, get them in practices and all those things. And I know a lot of these people are out there criticizing, like, these guys are millionaires, how are they not staying in shape? Well, what's important to note is a lot of these guys have now, they can't go to their facilities anymore. They can't go to the gym to work out. The NBA has closed those down to everybody, unless you're recovering specifically from an injury. So what you're seeing happen is these guys are, they're just not going to be in basketball shape. So one is, to say, all right, the league's restarting. Let's be super optimistic and say it's restarting around Memorial Day. Well, that means by the middle of May, you got to have the guys back in the gym just to start getting ready. So, or if you say we're starting bringing guys back around Memorial Day, well, that's the middle of June before you're going to be able to start playing. Then if you're going to say, let's jump right into the playoffs, that's really tough because we all know NBA players and teams, they take a period of probably about 2-3 weeks to really start to kind of play themselves into things and really get ready. And now you're looking at, you'll come right in and be ready to go. And that's going to be really, really hard. So because of that, I'm not too sure, but again, I'm an optimist. So let's to answer the first part of your question, unless you want to react to that, I can pause and take a breath here and let you actually talk on your own show.
No. Hey, look, I've said this before and I'll say it again. When I bring a guest on the show, you are the star of the show. You know, I bring you on because I want to hear your thoughts, your opinions, you know, everything that you've got to say. So by all means, keep dive into the first part of that question, please.
All right, man, go get a drink and come back in 5-10 minutes and I'll just keep it running here.
Yeah, I'll just go grab a beer. Yeah, no, we'll take it.
I love nothing more than the sound of my own voice. But no, as far as let's be an optimist, Ray, as me, let's all be me and let's be optimists. Say the league gets back and we do get the playoffs, and they're, I think they look similar to what they look like now. Well, for matchup wise, I love the West. I just think every one of those series is intriguing. Yeah, the Lakers probably blow out the Grizzlies, but there's some fun in there where you can really look at that. And then you can convince me pretty easily in any other matchup that either team can win, especially as they lay out right now. Now, I think the Clippers, again, yeah, I'd favor them to beat the Mavericks because I think when it comes down to it, Kawhi Leonard will lock Luka Doncic down, and that's going to make it really tough on Dallas. But the other series, Denver, Houston, Utah, Oklahoma City, 100%. You could see either any one of those four teams advancing there. It's also pretty close. So if we have at least a handful of regular season games, those teams are all within a couple games of each other. So that's going to be interesting, too, to see how that plays out. In the East, I think you've got two bad teams, Brooklyn and Orlando, and then you've got six pretty good teams. And I think Philadelphia, I'm curious to see, they said and have been saying for months and months and months, we're built for the playoffs. We built this thing for the playoffs. Let's just get there and see what it looks like. Is that true? You've got Indiana has played well. You've got Miami. A couple of those teams are kind of banged up. So the nice thing is this break maybe gives them the opportunity to get healthy and get guys back on the court. So I think you've got really intriguing matchups in the first round. And then once you start getting in the second round of conference finals, you start looking at some of these teams and you're like, man, barring some major upsets, we really can't lose as basketball fans, because you're getting, you know, anywhere from 4 to 8 really, really good teams that you don't have to really squint or really talk yourself into it too much to believe that they could actually win the title. So that's a lot of fun.
And I know Toronto's kind of a feel-good story with the fact that they, you know, they win the championship and then they lose Kawhi Leonard subsequently in the offseason, which got to sting a little bit, but they've played so well up to this point, you know, even after losing, you know, their guy this past summer. But I think the Pacers are kind of a feel-good story out there in the East, right? Without, you know, playing as well as they have played without Victor Oladipo, right?
Yeah, 2 years in a row, right, for the Pacers with that, because I think when he went down last year, almost all of us were like, all right, they were cute, they were a fun story, but write them off, and yet they hung in there, and I think having a guy like TJ Warren having the best season of his career has been really good. Malcolm Brogdon's been good when he's been able to play. He's been, you know, banged up in and out. I think we're up to 9 different injuries he's had this season, which is just, you know, kind of outrageous and quite frankly a little hard to believe. And now Oladipo is back, but he's having a manage some things. They're a team that I really look at. They lost Jeremy Lamb, and even if the league does come back to play, you're not going to see him because he tore his ACL. So you're not going to see, he's not one of these guys who could potentially maybe take the floor. But I think when you look at the Pacers, they are one of the teams that I think is positioned to benefit the most from this break, because Brogdon needed some time off to get healthy. Oladipo, he's only going to be stronger when he's not having to play every other night. And then you've got kind of the guys who've been doing the heavy lifting, TJ Warren, Domantas Sabonis, Miles Turner. Those guys are now able to get off their feet a little bit. And I think that's going to be really important. So the Pacers are definitely a team I've got kind of my eyes on if we get a restart here, because they could all of a sudden be looking pretty good in a first round matchup.
Coming up, we will wrap up our discussion with Keith Smith, so you guys don't go anywhere. And we are back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, wrapping up our conversation with Keith Smith. All right. And before we get you out of here, Keith, I kind of want to wrap things up with just my final question or potentially set of questions. We'll see how far down this rabbit hole goes. But, you know, and here's the thing is I don't consider myself by any means like, you know, a financial expert when it comes to the league. You know, I understand the basics of the CBA and, you know, some of that. But I leave that up to the experts and I just kind of, you know, see what other people have to say about it. So what do you think some of the financial implications are for the league at large because of, you know, this whole postponement and everything that's been going on?
Yeah. So one thing that I always couch this with, and this is a very popular question right now, is no one knows right now because it's so highly dependent on do they play at all? What do they play? Do we play games? Do we go right back to the playoff? Do we go right into the playoffs? Because the reality is I know a lot of people are like, well, the playoffs are what's most important. It's what people most care about. But a lot of these teams still had 9-10 home games left this year, some more, some less. But what you ended up with was you were looking at a group of teams that if you wipe out the rest of the regular season, say just go to the playoffs, those whole teams, like I just looked at them, the Portland Trailblazers, they have 9 home games left. Now those are just gone because they're not a playoff team. They're out and those teams are out. So roughly half the league, all of a sudden, there's just no games. And that's a challenge. You got to be able to figure out a way, all right, how do we keep those teams whole and feeling good about where we're going as a league, as a decision here? So let's start there just with, we don't know what it'll look like when they come back. If they come back and somehow they, let's pick it up where it left off, we've made the schedule work and we're going to finish this thing out with what it is, well, then we're probably not going to look that different. We might even look a little bit better because I think people are so starved over what will have at least been a month without basketball where people will say, oh my God, I'll watch it. Give me the Timberwolves Hawks. Like, I'm in. You know, give me that game, right? I'm going to turn that thing on. Now, the reality is I think the NBA is in some trouble for at least a year period here, salary cap wise and revenue wise, and revenue is what drives it. I don't want to get too deep into the details because I know people, if they're listening to this while you know, kind of laying in bed, they're just maybe they need it, maybe put you right to bed. But but for some others, you know, this is where I start to go glassy and no one wants to hear it. But the reality is, if we're talking anywhere from a $500 million to a $1 billion loss, that is massive because the players are entitled to roughly half of the income. So now you're taking away half, which means you're going to underpay the owners, which the owners can do all these things. We've heard talk of things like force majeure, which is basically owners saying, hey, act of God happened. Sorry, but we're not going to pay you know, what's owed. We're going to opt out of the CBA. That can even happen. Here's the best news for basketball fans, though. The NBA is the, you know, 30 team conglomerate that it is in the NBA Players Association, and that is the 500 players or so that they represent. They are very focused on, let's make this work. Both sides. No one wants to miss, you know, games, seasons, all of that. Everybody is focused on let's get this back. And as we saw with the last round of CBA negotiations, they did that thing early and got it wrapped up. And we didn't even miss a minute of anything. It was not very contentious. Both sides have a very good working relationship. And that's really, really important as we get into these things, because we want to make sure that these teams are kind of working together on this. And they want to be in lockstep to really make things, you know, as good as they can. And I think that's the thing basketball fans should take away. Even though it's increasingly looking like both sides are going to lose, I think they're going to get to a point where, okay, we're both going to lose here, but how do we both lose the least? And I think that's the big important takeaway.
And I know, you know, and so kind of I'll springboard one more question off this, I promise, in the way, you know, but just I think one guy who deserves, you know, an increasing amount of credit just as the season, you know, progresses and, you know, the things that he's dealt with is Adam Silver as the commissioner of the league. You know, you start off the season with obviously something that we talked about a lot here was, you know, the whole Daryl Morey China situation and then the things that he's kind of had to, the things that have popped up during the season that he's dealt with, you know, that had the passing of David Stern, had the passing of Kobe Bryant, and now the, you know, the league as a whole being suspended because of really the entire world, you know, being put on pause because of the coronavirus. You know, what does that say about Adam Silver? I mean, he's handled this pretty well, hasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely incredible leader. The fact that you have players coming out and praising a commissioner. That just doesn't happen. You know, people don't do that. Not to speak ill of someone who passed, but David Stern passing, you didn't have a lot of players coming out until after he was gone saying like, hey, this guy was a pretty good leader too, you know, and helped build our game into what it is. But Adam Silver in the moment, you know, everything really since he took over as commissioner, I think he has handled all of it about as well as you could possibly ask for. The Donald Sterling situation.
Yep, that comes to mind.
Right away,
definitely.
Right, I mean, handled that. That was a home run of, you know, we're done. We're not putting up with this guy's nonsense anymore. It has no place in our league. Get out of here. And I think, you know, no, I mean, except for maybe the Sterlings themselves, no one disagreed with that decision. And that's, you know, so maybe in some ways, some people are like, well, that was easy. I could have made that one from my couch. Well, could you have? Because you're still talking about a guy who then sold the team for billions of dollars. So, you know, that's never an easy thing. There's only 30 teams. That's why people always want to buy them, you know, yada, yada, yada. But to go back into just this year with everything that's happened in really relatively short order that all this kind of came thrown together, when you deal with this many things in the span of about a 5-month period or so, that's really kind of crazy when you start thinking about it. And I think he has just, you know, led with grace. Every time you hear him talk, I feel pretty good about it, even when you can tell he's kind of in a position where, all right, you kind of got me with that one. I wasn't really expecting that. He still answers it in a very thoughtful way, or he is what is really important to me is one of the things that we were taught where I, like I said, I worked for Disney for 20 years. It is okay at times to say, you know what? I don't know, but we're going to find out. And now with my, you know, world at Disney was, let's go find out right now because you're probably here on vacation and you don't have months. But I think it's okay when Adam Silver says, that's a great question. We haven't looked at it. I'm going to go find out. And I think that's really important because I don't think enough people do that and say, you know what? I'm not sure about that. We haven't thought about it. We haven't worked it all the way through. Let's go find out together. And I think that is really, really important.
Yeah, the transparency from him has been incredible. And the fact that you're right, you know, it is perfectly acceptable to, you know, for anybody, whether you're commissioner of the NBA or just, you know, Joe Blow every day, you know, average life, to say, hey, I don't, you know, I'm not knowledgeable enough on this situation, or, you know, there's not enough information at hand right now, but, you know, I'll look into it and I'll find out more and, you know, I'll have an answer for you shortly. You know, I think we could all take that to heart a little bit in our personal lives and our professional lives. I think that's a great mentality to have towards, you know, almost any situation. But, Keith, I really appreciate
you. You know, I want to just say, I thought was really cool was it was one of, I think it was the interview with Rachel Nichols, which was maybe it was last week. I don't know. I put this out on Twitter. I measure time and days and everything by sports. And so you could tell me it's the middle of April. And I'd be like, okay, sure. I guess if I couldn't see a calendar, I'd just believe you. But it is. So I think this was last week when he talked to Rachel Nichols. And I think one of the cool things he said in that conversation with her was, she asked him like, have you thought about this, the canceling the season? And he was very candid, transparent, and I think it spoke to the basketball fans and all of us of where he said, you know what, I just haven't let my mind go there yet. And maybe it's, you know, I think he said it's something like maybe it's short-sighted, but I just haven't allowed myself to think about it. And for me, I was like, man, that's where I am too. Like, I just can't imagine, you know, the day when somebody comes back and says, season's over, that's it. And that's what something that has stuck with me since he said that is like, yeah, that's just kind of where I am too. I just can't imagine saying, well, that's it, season's done. Now, maybe we get there and each day that passes, I think it's maybe a little more likely. But that's something that I thought was really, really neat that he was that open about it to just say, you know what? I'm just not there, because I think at the end of the day, he loves the game too. And I think that's really, really important is, you know, Adam Silver is still a fan of this game, which I think is unfortunately all too often maybe missing sometimes.
It circles back to the beginning of the podcast, kind of what we were talking about from your standpoint, you know, being a fan of the game.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And, you know, and that's it. And I think, you know, whether it's, you know, a fan of the game or a fan of, you know, I don't know, you know, woodworking or something like that, once you lose your passion for it, it's kind of, it becomes really hard. Then it starts to feel like a chore and it's not fun and all those things, you know. So that's where I really start to think through this stuff. And I say, you know, as long as you can always remember that you love it and why you love it, it makes it so much easier. And I think that is, you know, something that's really cool with a guy like Adam Silver. And it's really really cool to see how many people, players, coaches, front office people, former players have all been kind of coming out on social media and things and talking about like, man, I miss basketball. And you know what? Is it the right thing what we're doing right now? 100%. But is it okay to miss something that's really, really important to you? Yeah, it is. And I think it's cool to see all these guys kind of coming together and admitting that and sharing that out there for the world to hear.
Absolutely. Those two feelings are not mutually exclusive. I think it's the right move, but I definitely damn sure miss basketball. So with all that said, Keith, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to be here with us today. Just go ahead and give everybody, you know, plug all your social media channels, wherever we can find your content, and go ahead and knock that out.
And I tweet too much to be about anywhere other than Twitter. So you can find me on Twitter at Keith Smith NBA. I am on there a lot right now. If you tweet me, good chance you're going to get a reply to it. All I ask is be civil, be nice, be kind. We need a lot of that right now, especially, but we need that more all the time on there. And then you can find my written work at Yahoo Sports, NBC Sports, Celtics, specific coverage for Celtics blog. And then you can, pop up on podcasts and radio hits. I usually try to tweet those out every once in a while when those are going on as well. So, you know, and fingers crossed that most importantly, everyone is staying safe and everyone is following the directions and doing what you need to do. Keep you and yours healthy, and we'll all come through this together on the other side just fine.
All right, Keith, thanks again. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And one more time for Keith Smith. So if you're not already following him on the Twitters, please go give him a follow at Keith Smith MBA. He's informative, insightful, and honestly really happy that he was able to set aside the time to record this podcast with me. So I think that's where we will wrap things up for today. As always, thank you all so very much for tuning in, and I look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.